Big Uncensored is brought to you by Colonel Duff. Duff, helping a random handicapped guy in the middle of nowhere. Only on Gaming Uncensored.
Controlling transmission.
Divided by 1,000 miles of barren wasteland, two men mysteriously linked by alien technology on a podcasting mission to boldly deliver video game news and views directly to your brain. This is Gaming Uncensored. Now, your Gaming Uncensored guides, the dynamic duo, the video game gurus, a man on wheels, and a Yeti with a modem, Jamie and Tommy.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. How you doing? My name is Jamie Jordan, and this is a brand new episode of Gaming Uncensored, and being crippled is hard. And of course, Tommy's sitting over there. What's up, dude?
Not much, man. How you doing?
Like I said, being crippled is hard.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
We will talk more about that as we go along here because you guys should be excited because we're prepping for E3.
It's so close, man. It's right around the corner. Just over a month away.
And I'm coming to your house.
Yeah, you are.
Sort of. But that's been interesting. We've been trying to set that up. We've been trying to get stuff done. I've played a few games. I know you played a few games. You showed me something very interesting this morning, so we'll talk about that in a bit. But what is going on with you, sir?
You know, wrapping up the semester, having a baby, it's been a little nuts. You were trying to get a hold of me earlier in the week, and I just never got back to you until like late last night. I'm like, hey, man, I'm still alive. You want to do a show kind of thing? And so here we are, which is awesome. I'm glad we were able to work it out. But just with, end of semester stuff, I've been kind of nonstop anyway, and then add a baby into that mix. It's nuts. I call her the little time eater because it just like time just disappears, you know, like having a little girl, like it just, you're like, oh gracious, this day's over. Like, where did my day even go? You know, like it's insane how quickly like 3 hours will just go by. Like you're just taking care of a baby, like doing all the stuff, like feeding and changing and playing and all that stuff. And it's awesome. And I love every second of it. And I look up and it's 3 hours later. I'm like, oh gracious, you know, like I got to try to get some other stuff done too. And it's nuts. It's awesome. It's the best kind of nuts ever, but it's nuts.
Well, to be totally honest, that's kind of like what it's like to be crippled.
Right.
I get up and I get around, and after all the time it takes to do all that, I'm like, wait, where did they go?
Yep.
So yeah, I feel your pain.
That's fair. I've been around you in the morning. I know how long it takes you to get going.
It does.
it's an ordeal. So is a baby. So, you know, there's a lot of similarities between you and a baby, I think. we could make a fun list out of that.
I don't know if I should take that as a compliment or like an insult or like
probably a little of both.
Holy crap, man.
But she's awesome, so ultimately it's a compliment, right?
Yeah, I mean, I guess.
I would take it that way.
Yeah.
Yeah, go for it.
So, with all that being said, we haven't done a show in a while, and I'm sure there's a ton of news. Should we get into that?
Well, I figure we should talk about some games first, because we've been playing some games that are worth talking about, and it's awesome. As little time as I have, I say we've been playing some games. We've taken a brief look at a couple of games, but at least enough of a look to talk about them, which I think is good. So, where do you want to start at? because we got a couple.
Well, I have a third to add to that.
There you go.
We need to talk about. So let's start with, because the other one is fairly short and we don't know a lot, let's start with God of War.
Fair enough. So so I have God of War, which is awesome. Very, very cool thing. And so how much time do we have into God of War at this point? A couple hours, probably, somewhere around there.
About that, yeah.
Not a lot. Not a lot. Now, a blessing for you, I would imagine, is that I'm stopping the stream and not just letting it idle for a long time with the baby, because I know I'm going to be... My hands are going to be tied for a significant amount of time whenever I have to get up to do something with the baby. So there's some videos up on the stream that are actually fairly concise, that don't have these like 2 hour long pauses in the middle of them. So I imagine that's nice.
I've told you I don't mind the two hour long pauses, because there's fast forward with thumbnails, so
yes,
it's not that bad.
Yeah,
but yeah, you have been tighter, and I thought it was because you really like the game. I didn't think about the little girl.
Right. I do really like the game, and that's fair, too. But the little girl gives me a little bit more perspective control. So I've been playing a little bit of God of War. Again, scratch the surface at this point. We're not deep into it, and so there's a lot more to come. We've barely gotten into kind of basic leveling and all that kind of stuff. But at least enough to talk about how the game's presented, what the gameplay feels like, the world, all that kind of stuff. And so immediately it's radically different than every other God of War.
Look, all we had to really say is three little letters, and that's RPG.
Yeah.
Because it is.
It feels a lot more RPG-ish for sure than previous God of War games have, which is awesome. I love that. Obviously, we're big fans of RPGs, and so it's still a, you know, like beat 'em up kind of combat style, though deeper than what God of War combat has been. Different. I don't know if I want to say deeper, but different than what God of War combat has been. But it's just like. It's so much more of a mature game, and I don't mean that as in a like boobs and drugs and that kind of mature game, but so much more of a grown up game than the previous God of War titles, in that it's Kratos and his son. It's the this is slightly spoilery, it's not really, because it's been in every trailer and all that kind of stuff out there, but the death of the mother and trying to deal with stuff around that. And it's immediately the what we saw, the first teaser we saw at E3, the first bit of gameplay a couple years ago, with the scene of Kratos and his son working through like going and hunting the deer and all that stuff. It's the very first part of the game, and so it kind of just throws you into this father role, and it's slow and it's sentimental and it has kind of this emotional depth to it, all of which to me are incredibly foreign to God of War as a franchise. Like God of War, the very first God of War game is like naked woman right at the very beginning, you know, like it just starts with like a sex scene and it's awkward and weird or whatever. And that was every other God of War game too, that it was very much like just this very visceral, carnal, testosterone driven thing. And now it's like, oh wow, Kratos is old and has a kid and is like evaluating his life, and it's like a super downer. Like he's the most bummed out character that I've ever seen.
Well, I mean, like the funny thing is the interesting thing to me is you say that it's grown up and it's kind of like awkward. The whole thing is awkward for Kratos. I mean, like,
yeah,
he's like literally during the game he's walking around and you can tell he's thinking, what do I do? I don't
right.
know what to do. What,
yeah.
How do I do this? I
got right.
What's that kid's name again? I can't remember the kid's name.
Yeah, it It is. I mean, obviously, I'm connecting to this in ways different than I've connected to video games in the past, mainly because it's the first big game I've played after having a child. And then specifically, it's this video game that's about the main character trying to come to terms with being a dad. You know, like that's really at the heart of the game so far, is that it's Kratos trying to figure out how to take care of this kid that he's not really been responsible for taking care of before now. It's a kid who's old enough to like manage himself and all that kind of stuff, and has some weird powers that we're going to figure out later in the game and all this kind of stuff. But you know, on just on a really basic level, in my life right now, I'm also figuring out how to take care of a kid, and this is all foreign and new. And so, like, just little things that he says or ways that he reacts to stuff, I'm like, oh yeah, yeah, I get that. That's right. You know, like, I just have this like weird fatherly bond with Kratos, which is something, if you would have like told me, you know, 15 years ago, whenever the first God of War game came out, that this was going to be the connection that I had in my 30s to God of War game, I would have been like, that sounds super lame. In my 30s, I'm like, this is amazing. You know, like, this is exactly what I need in my life right now. And so, yeah, I really dig that. It feels like a Naughty Dog title in a lot of ways. You know, like, it feels like they've gone that route with some of the presentation, how cinematic it is, and that kind of stuff. Much more than just the kind of run through and rip things apart that God of War was in the past. To be fair, there's still a lot of ripping things apart. Like, it's still really visceral and gory, and like the little like special, like, you build up the combo meter kind of thing, and then you can do like an execute move. Those are so fun, like ripping guys in half. Ripping the draugrs in half is incredibly fulfilling.
Ripping the throat out, that's good. But,
yes, it is great. And so it still has like what I loved about God of War before, because I've always enjoyed the game, so I'm a big fan of the franchise, and even the kind of visceral over-the-top thing, you know, it's this kind of testosterone-driven thing. They haven't totally taken that out. There's still that taste of it there. But it's all in the framework of this kid who's there the whole time, and that you're watching over and caring about and having to make decisions for and all that kind of stuff. And so it feels like a really good balance. And like we said before, it feels like a game that's growing up with the people who play it. You know, I played the first God of War when I was 19 or 20. You know, I'm playing this one when I'm 34. And it feels like it's evolved with me from being a college kid to being an adult dad, you know, with my own kid and job and all that kind of stuff. Like, it just feels like it makes sense for me in my life right now, and that's cool. That's a fun place to be. It's cool to see a franchise like this kind of evolve with us, with where we're at in life.
Yeah, I'm gonna cede the floor to you as far as the fatherly stuff goes, because you're in the middle of that right now. But it is definitely very much, it's like watching, remember when we were kids and there was a show on called 30-something?
Uh-huh.
Remember 30-something?
Uh-huh.
It's like watching 30-something. Like, you're watching this thing and you're like, wow, this is so adult.
Yeah.
Like, we're dealing with some adult stuff. And then Kratos is like, wait, take a break. I got to crack some heads. And then we're back to adult stuff. You know, like, it's very, 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 it's different.
It is.
Very different.
Yes, for sure. The rest of the kind of mechanics of the game, I think, work really well. The combat system's a little bit different. It's a little bit more tactical than just run in and beat everything up. And so previous God of War games is a little bit more like wave upon wave of enemy, and there's still a sense of that here. But you have to be more tactical in the combat and actually timing and using defense stuff as opposed to just button mashing, which I was always pretty well able to get through God of War in the past with just button mashing. I've died several times in this game already early on to enemies that I probably shouldn't be dying to, just because you kind of have to figure out the patterns, the like how to beat every enemy. And then once you kind of figure out, okay, here's what works good well against them, here's what doesn't. So some enemies you want to attack with the axe, some you want to attack just bare-fisted, and you get like different bonuses for like the combo meter if you go at them without the axe, but obviously it doesn't do as much damage. And so there's this balanced thing of the first time you encounter an enemy, you're like, oh, what do I do with this? And you start just hacking and slashing. You're like, okay, well, that doesn't work. You know, like, let's figure out, like, okay, here's when I should block. Oh, he's always going to attack a second time after this first attack, and so I need to dodge twice. You know, it's that kind of stuff that when you get into some of these big battles, you're probably going to die once or twice figuring it out. And then once you figure it out, it's kind of fun to be tactical with it and try to figure out, like, okay, now I know what I'm doing. Can I execute? And it makes it a little bit deeper as far as the combat system than just button mashing until everything's dead, which is rewarding in its own right. Like I love that kind of gameplay too. But this offers something again that's a little bit more mature in the same way that the storyline it feels like is a little bit more grown up, has matured a little bit. It feels like the gameplay has as well.
Well, I don't know about you, but you have that a lot. And I don't have a problem with that. If you had, we're way, 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 way early in the game, right?
Yes, and, yes, and, very, and, very much.
And you have gotten your head handed to you several times.
Yes.
I mean, like, literally, oh, sorry, you're dead. And that is... That's we've talked a lot about games being too easy previously on this show.
Yes.
God of War is not that.
Yep.
I guess it would be if you change the difficulty, but
sure. Yeah. And so I'm playing on the like standard difficulty. So there's like the easy version and then there's the like super hard version, which you can't change off of, which it tells you if you choose that one. There's like the super hard version that's like you can't downgrade this in the middle of the game if you get stuck. You have to start all over. And so make sure you really want to do this. And I'm like, nope, have no interest in that. I'm not that kind of gamer. But it's cool that, that version of it exists. But even on the kind of standard difficulty, it presents a challenge for me as somebody who's been playing games for 30 years. Which is good. I like that. It's a good balance. It's not making me super frustrated where I don't want to play it because I'm dying all the time. But it's also not giving it to me. Like it's making me feel like I have to work for it.
And that's a very, very good thing. And I think it's going to keep you interested for the rest of the game. Like the first thing that I said to you when I saw it, I watched 5 minutes of it and I saw all that was going on. And there's a ton going on. We talked about Horizon, and I told you how I hated the inventory screen because there was a ton going on. I feel yep. the same way about God of War. Like, you're doing stuff, and I can't really tell what you're doing because the print is really, really small because they have to fit it all on that one screen.
Yeah.
And so I'm having a hard time. But there is a lot going on, and I told you, after seeing 5 minutes of it, I was like, this is game of the year, and I still believe that.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of good stuff coming out, but it's definitely going to be a contender. At this point, it's the best thing that's come out this year. We're only in April, but it's... Yeah, even 2 hours in or whatever, like I'm pretty confident, you know, like it's so well polished, it's well put together. By the way, I just have to mention, again, this is slightly spoilery, but not enough for me even to pull up the production. So God of War has always been about these big epic boss fights. Very early in the game, you fight a troll, which is pretty fun. And it's, you know, you got to be tactical. I died a few times on that battle and it was cool. But then you have this scene with this guy that's just called the Stranger so far, which I'm sure we'll get more details about this as we get deeper in the game, that shows up to Kratos' house, and then they have this big fight. And the dude is like a smaller version of Kratos. Like, he's kind of scrawny looking. He's not very intimidating looking, but he has like these crazy powers too and doesn't feel pain apparently.
Wait a minute.
So,
I'm going to chase a rabbit. Are you ready for this? Because I'm going to ask you a question I don't know that you know the answer to. Did you ever watch The Incredible Hulk when you were a kid?
Sure.
Did you ever see that episode with the other Incredible Hulk? The really old guy that like had it and then he lost it and then he want, Bill Bixby showed up to try to get healed and the guy was like, but I want it back. And for like an hour in that episode, there was like two of them. Like, did you ever see that?
I bet I did. I don't remember it. I don't recall it at all.
But I kind of like, I feel that way about this. Is that, that it just like there's so much happening here. That you like with that guy, you kind of wonder, is he like Kratos' brother or like are they related? Obviously, he's half god because he put Kratos in the ground
lots of times,
And
I bring all that up to say that it was such a fun fight, and it's very scripted, you can die because I did die once, I think. But there was a lot of it that's scripted that it's like this fight with stages. And so there's a point you get beat down and there's cutscenes and then you like get back up and are awesome. And then there's cutscenes and then it kind of cycles through a few different things. But it's just so well put together. It's so much fun. And it's not this big, giant boss like what God of War has always done so well. And it's going to do more of in this game. I know because I've seen enough previews of the game to know that there's big bosses coming. But what it did very early on is establish this awesome fight that's between another dude that's not a giant or not like a dragon or whatever, you know, like it's just a dude and you get this great combat scene that's already outside of kind of the God of War norm and yet was executed so well. And again, in so many ways, it feels so different than what the franchise has in the past. But it's still familiar enough that you're like, this is great. It's weird. It's different, but it's fantastic. You know, it's just this kind of roller coaster of emotions of experience with the game that's already super cool, and I imagine only going to get much better.
I think it's going to get a lot better. Yeah. I think the story is going to be deep. There are puzzles that aren't insane, but it's like, holy cow, that's an actual puzzle that you have to use your brain and figure out.
It plays in a lot of ways, like so far it reminds me a lot of Uncharted in the God of War universe. It's very linear. There's very little exploration. There's a little bit, like anywhere you see like two branching paths, like go down one a little ways to see if it's like the story path, and if it is, turn around and go back and go down the other path to see what like chest is at the end of the path or whatever. It does a lot of that, which is a lot of games have done that. I'm just thinking recently with Naughty Dog's approach, it feels kind of that way, that you're not going off and just exploring the world by any means, but it still feels like this big world. Like it still feels like it's open in a way. But the game's about this journey. Like you have a destination you're trying to get to with your son, and so it kind of should feel linear in that, you know, like it's a step-by-step process. Like you're going from this place to this place to this place. And to tell the story, it has to follow that. And so if you're looking for like a big open world game, this is definitely not it. But it does have enough of an RPG feel, and it does have enough kind of grandeur to the world, to the environment, that it feels kind of like an open world game. And again, I compare it to Uncharted in that way, where Uncharted has always felt more open than it actually is. It feels like you can do more stuff than you actually can, because they do such a good job of framing that world that it's not just running into walls that you're like, oh, I can't go here, so too bad. It feels more open than the gameplay will actually let you do.
Which I think is kind of okay, because if this was an open world, we would probably get lost.
Sure.
I don't know about you, but I don't want to play God of War in Skyrim.
Right.
Like, I don't want to do that. So
absolutely.
I'm totally okay with the linearness of this.
Yeah.
But the one thing I will say is that, you know, we've been talking a lot about loot and stuff in chess and games and all that kind of stuff. I have no idea what's going on with the loot. Because, like, he pulls the thing out, and it doesn't really ever tell you what it is.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
And so, like, is that awkward to you, or am I just not seeing something? Because it doesn't say, hey, here's what you got.
Yeah, it's a little weird. It definitely is strange in how it's set up, in that a lot of the chests contain like the currency in the game. I can't remember what it's called, but whatever the what you use to get stuff made with the awkward little guy that you meet pretty early in the game.
Dude, that guy is ridiculous.
Yeah, I don't remember what it's Brock. Is that his name? Brock? It's something like that. He's ridiculous. But you can trade in, you know, that materials that you find in order for him to upgrade, like your axe or Atreus's bow or whatever. And so that's what most of those chests are that don't pop up with anything. There's a couple that have had like a collector's item in them, or like a rune. I found one rune so far that upgrades your weapon in some way, or the cool chests, the kind of puzzle chests that have the runes on them that you have to find the runes in the environment and destroy them in order to open up the chest. Those have like the components that let you have more life or more fury or rage or whatever the other metric is called. And so you got to find like three of those to trade them in for more health on your health bar or whatever. And so those are the only things I can think of in the chest so far. There's not been like new weapons yet or anything like that. And it feels like the game's going to be very much centered around the axe. I hope that there's some other cool, interesting weapons. That's always one of the fun parts of God of War 2 is getting kind of different weapons that add strategic incentives. Yes. Into the combat system. And so hopefully that happens. I imagine it will, but it really, they're building the axe up as being a big part of the storyline as well. And so I imagine that's going to be a central theme throughout.
I keep expecting to hold it up and go, Odin!
Yeah, that's fair. So.
It's a whole lot like Thor's hammer.
It is. And I even read something where they kind of modeled it off of that. That was very much in their mind when they were coming up with the weapon. It feels very much like Thor's hammer. So, yeah, you get to throw it around, which is fun. You can throw it at enemies and they use it for puzzle purposes and that kind of stuff, which is cool. So, yeah, I'm digging it so far and was going to play more of it this morning. And then we got sidetracked on a different game. And so should we talk about that as well?
We should. But real quick, before we wrap up God of War, I just want to bring up the fact that I think it scales really well, because right now, where we are in the game, I was amazed that you were surrounded by enemies and you went into rage and you took out one guy.
Yeah.
Like, you beat the son out of this guy, and finally at the end of the rage, it's like, oh, he's dead. And there's six more. So,
yeah.
So that's the other thing that I like. I think the scaling is awesome.
I agree with that. I think it makes it where it's both really fun in those like rage moments, and like you're like, oh crap, I can still die. Like that didn't get me out of trouble. Like I have to work my way out of this yet. And you do. And I've used rage and yet still died, which is cool. It's fun. So.
Yeah.
So the other thing that we just took a quick look at this morning, and which is fair because there's only a quick look to be had at this point, is that there's a Detroit Become Human demo up on PlayStation Network right now. So, yeah, we downloaded that and played around with that for a little bit.
And that is intense.
Yeah, it's pretty nuts. So, let me, first of all, we've got a little guest now, so. We'll
yeah, see, I gathered that was what was going on.
So a little awkward pauses in there, now you know why. She's going to hang out with us for a little bit. So let me let you start this one, both so I could get her situated. But also, I kind of want to hear what you think about it, just seeing one little scene from Detroit Become Human.
All right. So first of all, it is extremely intense. It's one of those things that, like, we played it. It's like a 20-minute scene from the what I think is probably the beginning of the game. And it is definitely, definitely, definitely intense. Like, it's on the edge of your seat kind of stuff. And I really dig it. I can see where, and we've talked about this before, I can see where it's going to turn some people off. I can see where you play like 5 minutes of it and you're like, ah, okay, I'm out. But the scene that we played was that the police or somebody sent an android in to negotiate with another android that had a hostage. And so you have to walk around the apartment and get all of this information about what's going on and who got shot and what happened. And it's really cool. It's very investigative. You have to pay attention. But I can see where that would turn a lot of people off. I like it. I think it's going to be cool. But again, we haven't played enough of it to really know anything at this point. Like, yeah. That's my main thing with this deal is like, I just want to know what's going on.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, it's very Quantic Dream. It's from the very first second. If you had played a Quantic Dream game before and didn't know that this was one, you would know immediately just picking it up. Like, it just feels like that in every way. It has all the David Cage elements of narrative and storytelling and everything else. That you expect from a Quantic Dream game. And so if you like them, if you've played Heavy Rain, which I think this one is probably going to be most like Heavy Rain, at least the feel of it so far, because it has that kind of investigative thing, and Heavy Rain was all about this serial killer. It feels like it's that route, but beyond Two Souls or even Indigo Prophecy. If you like those games, I think you're probably going to like this one. If you hated those games, I think you're probably going to hate this one. It's not reinventing what David Cage and Quantic Dream does. It's doing a very similar thing. And so,
and I wonder how much money they make on these, because I think it's a very segmented audience.
Yes. Yeah, I agree with that. And so it's not going to be the game that appeals to everybody. It's not going to be like God of War. That's even, you know, not going to appeal to everybody. But God of War is going to have a pretty massive audience. Detroit Become Human is going to have a much smaller audience. But people like us who really enjoy these games, I think we're going to love it. And it did a lot of things that, again, it's not surprising from David Cage. First of all, it just looks so freaking good. Like, one of the things about the Quantic Dream titles have always been they're super pretty. This one is super pretty. It may be just visually the best looking game that I've played, you know, like it's that bar. That Uncharted 4 is right up there. There's a couple other things that are high on that list, but just graphically, it's so well done. And the kind of investigative side of it, I don't know how much of the game is going to center around that, because Connor, the character that you play as in the demo, is one of three characters that you play as in the game, which again has a very Heavy Rain vibe to it. Heavy Rain had the same thing where you played multiple characters in the storyline, and so the other characters may have very different gameplay elements, different narrative elements, but at least with this one character, it feels like you're going to be doing a lot of investigation stuff, potentially through the world and that kind of stuff. Now, all that being said, and this is slightly spoilery again, but there's a scenario which the dude dies, and so maybe he's not one of the main characters through the whole game, or if this happens early on. I just don't know. Like, the kind of branching aspects of a David Cage or Quantic Dream game opens up a massive world of stuff that can happen that I don't even pretend like I'm going to try to figure out at this point.
Well, for example, the first take of the demo that you played, I was happy with the end. Like,
yeah.
That made sense to me. The second one, not so much. Because, like you said, dude saved the day, but dude also died. Like, he fell off a building.
Yeah.
Like, so...
Like, which this is a scene, by the way, that we've seen already that they showed off at E3 again the year before last. I think they showed this off originally, and so at E3 they kind of showed those options. As again, it's a demo. I don't care about spoilery stuff here, but there's a handful, I think 5 or 6 different ways that you can play it out. Because one of the cool things is after you finish, after you complete the mission, it shows you kind of the flow chart of what could happen, where each decision kind of takes you on a different path. And it shows you the details of the things that you did, and then the other ones are hidden. So it doesn't tell you what other endings are possible. But because it was only like 20 minutes, I went back and played it again to try to get a different ending. And so, yeah, one of them, the main character lived through it, but I had to be like dishonest and lie to the guy to get him to earn my trust. And then at the end, it's super sad because the android gets killed. And as he's dying, he's like, "You lied to me." And it's like, yeah, well, we saved the little girl, so we're pretty cool with that, you know, like whatever, man. But the other time I played it through differently, trying to get a different ending, and succeeded in an ending where Connor, the character I'm playing, dives off the edge of the building with the kidnapper, and they both die, and so who knows what happens there. Also, they're androids, so maybe they get put back together and they don't actually die. Who knows? Like, there's a million different ways that can play out. But it's always – Quantic Dream is one of those studios that plays with this idea of choice mattering a little bit more than a lot of other of the studios that do the similar thing do, in that – you know, at the end of the day, a lot of things are going to end out playing the same way, no matter what choices you make, because they have to have at least enough of a kind of through line to get you through the story of the game, the narrative of the game. Because, for instance, like if Connor's one of the main characters that's supposed to go throughout the game, and this is the first mission, if you kill him off in the first mission, like, what do you do with the rest of his storyline if he's supposed to have more storyline? And so, obviously, there's always stuff like that that you kind of have a suspension of disbelief that has to go into it to feel like your choices matter a lot. But yet it still feels like your choices matter a lot here because it can play out so differently.
Well, and the thing is like, what I wonder is how many different ways are you gonna want to play that on a given playthrough? I mean, a demo is one thing. But if you're playing the game and you do something and you get yourself killed, you really don't want to go back and do that again.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of curious as to how that's going to play out, because like you said, there's lots of options.
Which is what makes it cool, which is what is appealing about these games. And there was no action in this. It wasn't even really quick time events. There was only one really quick time event that happened right at the end of the second playthrough where I hurtled myself off the top of the building, and there was a little button mashing kind of thing. Everything else was just interacting with the world, and very much the Quantic Dream way of you maneuver the joystick in different directions to pick stuff up or put it down. That's supposed to feel kind of natural. That's what they talked about a long time ago, I think, with Heavy Rain, maybe even some with Indigo Prophecy. But it's supposed to kind of feel natural that once you get into the swing of the game, you don't even really have to pay attention to the controller. Like, it's just a kind of extension of what you want to do.
Right.
They even use a little touchpad on the PlayStation 4 controller, which is cool. Not a lot of games utilize that for things. Like, to unlock essentially a tablet, like an iPad, like a futuristic iPad, you had to swipe on the little touchpad, which is just a cool, like, tactile thing. Like, it's very, very natural to have that feel. But it was walking and manipulating the joysticks to look around is basically all the gameplay. If you're coming here looking for an action title, it's definitely not going to be that. It may have a few sequences that are all going to be based on QuickTime events, because that's what Quantic Dream does. And that also can be very off-putting. And so if you're looking for gameplay, it's probably not the ideal game for gameplay purposes. But if you're looking for what I think will be an interesting story with a lot of depth and interest and intrigue, I think it's going to live up to that and be really interesting and fun.
It is, but again, I can see potential for this one going bad.
Yeah, like, I agree. I feel like I always have that fear of Quantic Dream titles, like that it's just not going to pay off. And beyond Two Souls, I don't think quite paid off as well as Heavy Rain. I loved Heavy Rain. I thought Heavy Rain was brilliantly done. Beyond Two Souls was kind of okay. You know, like it didn't quite have the payoff. And so I'm hoping this one is kind of more back to Heavy Rain.
And what does that have to say? I mean, that's one. Let's put it to you this way. This is a game that is definitely a rental until you figure out what you're dealing with.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
I mean, I don't think there's any debate that it's definitely a rental until you figure out where you're at.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, God of War I bought. Didn't have any questions about that one. Especially once, you know, we saw the Metacritic reviews that people are like, yep, it's really, really good. It's like, okay, I love God of War, and it's getting 95s and 100s everywhere. So, yeah, it makes sense. This one's going to be one you'll probably want to try out for a while. And so, yeah, I think that's fair. I love the fact that they put a demo up. And you know, like demos seem fairly archaic to me at this point. Like I just don't play a lot of demos. A lot of games I want to play don't put out demos. But as soon as I saw there was a demo for it, oh yeah, I got to check that out, because not only am I super pumped about this game because I love the studio, but I'm also super nervous about the execution of this game because I know the studio, you know, like I have an expectation of what they do, and I know that it could potentially end up being kind of sketchy.
Right. And before we wrap this up, can we talk about graphics real quick? Because we kind of gloss over that, but
yeah.
The last two games that we have talked about are spectacular.
Spectacular. And both on the PlayStation 4. Both are PS4 exclusives, which it's not to say that there's not good-looking stuff on the Xbox One. Obviously, there is very good-looking stuff on the Xbox One. But those are one really big-name title and one at least somewhat big-name title that has a lot of interest around it that are really pretty and yeah, PS4 exclusives.
I don't have a 4K TV. That's right, Chad, I still don't have one. But I can see the pores on Kratos' face on YouTube. Like, that's how good it is. And that's, I'm amazed that we're to a point in gaming that we just sort of gloss over that. Like, yeah. It's just part of what we do. And that to me is amazing.
I agree with that. God of War looks spectacular. And I think Beyond probably looks better, you know, like they're very different styles. And so it's a little weird to try to compare them. But they're both really, really pretty games. And what you're seeing too is off of not a PS4 Pro. It could potentially even look slightly prettier. I'll say I watched a comparison of, you know, God of War between a PlayStation 4 and a PS4 Pro. And granted, it wasn't on like a 4K display to get the full effect of it. Man, I just can't see that much of a difference. Like, maybe I'm not picky enough, you know, like I could see that it's different. But I don't know that I could tell you which one was better. You know, like if you like blind A/B tested me on it, I don't know that I would pick the one that's supposed to look better. I could tell that there's a difference between them, but the differences are pretty subtle. Maybe if you have a 4K TV, it's more striking. I don't know. But on my TV, it was they're both really awfully pretty. Which is good. I'm super glad that I don't feel like I have to upgrade my PlayStation 4 to make it super pretty. I'm also still waiting for the convincing reason to need a PS4 Pro.
Chad is having a stroke somewhere.
but he's got that pretty 4K TV, and so maybe that makes all the difference.
But I agree. I mean, I don't really see the point at this point. There was a debate going on at work this week whether the PS4 Pro does native 4K, and it does not. It's upscaled.
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay, it's got a little more muscle, but other than that, why would we buy it?
Yeah, and to be clear, the difference between the PS4 Pro and the Xbox One X is I think, still pretty striking in that the Xbox One X is a more powerful console and a bigger upgrade than what the PS4 Pro is. But the end of the day, the truth of the matter is that Sony has the games, and that's more important than the hardware. And God of War and Detroit Become Human, I think, are two key examples of that. Where the Xbox One X may be phenomenal, and I would definitely take one if someone gave one to me, but I'm going to be playing my PlayStation because that's where the games are that I want to play.
And the crazy thing to me is that I have absolutely no reason. Like, I don't even have a reason to look at an Xbox One X. Like, I just don't have it.
Yeah.
And
I want to.
Yeah. That's to me, that's sad for Microsoft because I don't even want to look at it. I mean, like, I'm like you. If somebody gave us one, cool. But otherwise, not.
Yeah. Yeah.
And before we move on, I must say, you said you had company over there. We have to take a small baby break because I have to ask how things are going over there.
Yeah, well, she's gone again.
Okay.
So she was here for a little bit. But the sexy sidekick is home today, which is good. And so as soon as she got a little bit restless, the sexy sidekick came in and took her. So she's gone, which is sad.
She's like, do not corrupt my kid.
She was, yeah, that's completely fair, 100%. And baby girl was sitting here yawning and getting pretty bored with us. And so she was not as captivated by the show at this point as I would have hoped. So
that's
we got to work
good.
To win her over.
Yeah, we're going to have, when it happens that we have our space, which, by the way, I think while I'm there for E3, we should go looking around for spaces.
Fair enough.
But when we have our space, we're going to have a little corner for her with all kinds of cool stuff and a toy box.
Yes.
Like all kinds of cool stuff so she can come hang out. And we'll get her own little mic and like little laptop. I'm all about that.
For sure.
So yeah, we're totally sucked in. We apologize, but
yeah,
it is what it is.
Yeah. So,
the third game on the list. I decided to go ahead and install Divinity Original Sin, Divinity 2 Original Sin, and man, I gotta tell you, this thing reeks of D&D, like to the point that it even has a dungeon master voice, and I'm playing it and I'm just at the very beginning. I've played more than an hour, but this is what Diablo 3 should have been 5 years ago.
Nice.
Like, it's that kind of deal.
That's encouraging,
and I dig it so much. Like, I'm gonna tell you, now that you have your gigabit fiber internet, just start downloading it right now, because you're going to want to play this. Like, that's all I can tell you, is that it's what Diablo 3 should have been, and I'm not even out of the first area. Like, I'm just telling you, it reeks of D&D. And I say that because I've been playing D&D with some guys, and I know what that looks like.
Sure.
And it's like they took a D&D game and they put it in a video game, man. It's awesome.
Like, I love that. That as soon as you say Diablo or D&D and compare a game favorably to either one of those worlds, I'm in.
Like, this thing, it's a lot like Diablo 2, but it even does some stuff that Diablo 2 didn't do. Like, for example, I was selling cabbage. The other night when I was playing it, I came up on my first persuasion check. You know, like, there's a couple of guards there, and you're trying to talk your way out of trouble. And I failed. And
nice.
It actually said, instead of, like, they don't believe you, the narrator guy said, you actually, like, it actually says, you failed the check. And I'm like, I can see somebody up in the sky somewhere rolling dice, you know?
Right.
and it's just really, it's really cool. It's really well put together. It's really pretty. Like, I could tell you a lot of little stuff, but I think I've told you all you need to know, which is that you need to install this and we need to play it.
Yep.
Because
I'm convinced.
It's enough D&D and it's enough Diablo that and like I said, I haven't even got anywhere yet. I don't, like, our thing with Diablo 2 has always been, there's not much of a Diablo story. Like, that's not a thing. And I don't think this is going to be much better. My only remaining question about this is about the gear. Like, I haven't played enough to know about the gear yet. But that's all I got left. If the gear is good, you got me from now on.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to look at Diablo 4 and go, stupid wizard, why didn't you do this?
Yeah. Which, I mean, if somebody's doing it well and executing, I'm all for it. I hope that Blizzard does that with the next one, but who cares? If somebody's doing it well, I'm happy. And so if Divinity 2 is that, I'm happy. And we'll be downloading it straight away. So we've got that, and we've got the jailbreak game. What's it called? A Way Out. I wanted to say Get Out, and I'm like, Get Out's a movie. That's really good, and you should watch it. But whatever. We need to play that as well. We've got some gaming to do over hopefully the next couple months.
Yeah, I don't know where we're gonna get time to do that, but it's gonna happen.
Yeah,
I'm really glad to be a gamer at this point. I wish I had more time. To be totally honest, and I can't believe I'm going to say this out loud, but I'm not going to be that depressed this year if E3 sucks.
Yeah.
Because I'm coming to your house. If E3 sucks, I have no idea where we're going to set up, but all I know is there's going to be screens everywhere.
Yeah.
And if E3 sucks and all we have to do is play a game for 4 days, then I'm good with that.
Yep, 100% fair. So, all that being said, we have a segment from our boy Brigham. So we're going to play a segment from our boy Brigham, who's going to talk to us about Monster Hunter, which he has a very different take on than Cabbage. And so I love that. We heard Cabbage talk about it on the roundtable. Brigham has a very different feel. But he's also going to be talking about it while playing PUBG, which is pretty great, too. So him and a buddy are playing PUBG while he's talking about Monster Hunter, which is fantastic. So we'll let him take it away. By the way, just quick warning, there's a good bit of language about to happen, and so if you've got little ones around, be aware. he will give you that disclaimer, but after quite a bit of language has already happened, so I will preempt him a little bit on that. So a little bit of language here, but it's definitely entertaining. We appreciate it, so we'll let him take that, and we'll come back with some news. So without further ado, here is Brigham.
What's up, Jamie and Tommy? It's Brig. Got my buddy here. He's not going to talk much. We're just playing PUBG on PC. It's the shit. Got my new PC. Other PC completely died. Long story short, I got hooked the fuck up. i7-8700K water cooling, 16 gigabytes, 2100 megahertz of memory, M.2 SSD, 256 gigabyte SATA SSD, 1 terabyte SATA hard drive, and a 2 terabyte Western Digital Black hard drive. It is the shit. Hey, Nick, where do you want to go? You
want
to stay here for a bit? Because the ruins is right inside the circle.
Yeah, let's move in.
Okay. But I got something I just can't stand. Like, try playing Monster Hunter, guys. And I played when it came out, shortly after it came out, played about 4 hours, and I just can't stand it. It's too fucking easy. It's too much of the exact same mission. It's the exact same mission over and over again. It's, hey, we got a monster, go kill it. That's all there is to it. And so many people are so fucking obsessed with this damn game. By the way, principal advisory, cover your damn kids' ears. Because this the right monster right. Everyone no loves. Monster Hunter, it doesn't make sense. Like, people say it's so hard. Like, I already got into the desert area within the first 3 hours. You can run, when you're exploring, you can just run by every single monster and they don't even attack you. Unless you're in a group with those little slags or whatever. It just, oh. He's down. But these playing PUBG guys, so yes, it's going to be loud. Cover your ears. Oh, shit, I'm coming. Take him to me. Where is he? I see him. Get him away.
Got him.
Nice. That was his buddy because he went straight down. I'm going to go with the other guy. So it's like, it says, hey. Like, this chick is like, she keeps on saying that. And then also another thing that's so broken about that game, and I guess it's part of standard with JRPGs, is that they just, they're clunky, horrible interfaces. And if that's the case, then they need to redesign. I don't know why people ever want to accept those kind of standards in games. It's beyond pathetic. It's a poor use of animation, poor use of skill and talent. And for anyone who wants to accept that, then I don't know what's wrong with you. Somehow, this Monster Hunter has taken the globe by surprise and number one selling. Maybe I'm wrong, but it's like, do people not have any standards on games that it's not just one mission in the sense of every single mission is identical? Go here, fetch. That's it. Clear it out. Clear that one enemy out. And it's so easy. It's a repeat pattern. All the enemies have a very easy death spot. It's pretty much right underneath their back feet, and you can easily kill them. I died maybe only four times in the four or five hours I played. Wait for the fucking plane. Goddamn plane's interrupting me. But it's just like, I don't get it. I don't know if you guys have been playing it yet or if anyone else, but it makes no sense. It's super repetitive. The interface is over clunky. The voice acting is non-existent. It's like, of a whole like conversation, you get one sentence that's voice acted. Like, what's the point? Like, hey, Sergeant, you're doing this and this. And then you have to read the rest of the text. Like, it doesn't make no sense. So, end of rant, guys. I don't get it. PC gaming for the win. Fuck Monster Hunter. What else can I add? Got anything, Nick?
Nope.
Okay. And the new specs, it's amazing. Raw recording, I still get over 80 frames per second with ultra settings on PUBG. It's the shit. Well, deuces, guys. Oh, yeah, by the way, I'm playing with the 1060 6GB version just because my 970 also died when all my computer hardware died. And EVGA sent me a 1060 6GB to replace my 970 for free. So it was pretty badass. Well, thanks for playing the segment, guys. Deuces.
If you've got something to say, send us an email. It's gaminguncensored@gmail.com.
Gotta be God of War.
Yeah. Wasn't really another option we could go today.
You could have played Detroit, but I wouldn't have gotten that.
Nah. I don't even know what the music sounded like for Detroit. I'm sure it was fine. But yeah. God of War is awesome. So there's some God of War for you.
So that segment. Wow.
That's pretty great.
Wow. Oh, loved it. Like, wow.
First of all, welcome to the show, Nick. Glad you were here.
Yeah.
That was my favorite part of the whole thing. Anything to add, Nick?
No.
Nope.
That
fantastic.
I love it because it's the major ADD.
Yes.
Like, you know you got major ADD going on when you pay attention to PUBG and do a segment. That is awesome. With a friend on the mic. That's a major ADD.
Yep, fantastic. And I love having the other opinion of a game, of a game that neither one of us has played, and honestly, neither one of us is probably ever going to get to. Maybe someday if we get some time, but I know for me, I have a list that's much bigger. And so hearing Cabbage love it is encouraging and makes me want to play it more for sure. But I love having the other perspective too. I don't get it at all. Thanks. So that was great.
we're only gonna have time when we're about 65. I think.
I know. We'll retire someday.
Yeah, I don't know how because I'm broke. But buy my book. You should buy my book. Which, by the way, I've got a real quick funny little thing to tell you. People have a hold of it, and I've been getting some reviews on Amazon. Which, by the way, if you have a copy and you haven't written a review on Amazon, please go and do that. But something funny that somebody told me was that they found one mistake in the book.
Uh-huh.
I'm like, what do you mean you found one mistake? And they were like, you missed a semicolon. And I'm like, I'm going to tell Tommy that because that's pretty funny. If he could,
yeah.
There was a lot more than one mistake in there. And if all you missed was a semicolon, then good on you, sir. Because
I feel pretty good about that, honestly. Yeah.
Yeah. And the guy even said, I don't even know if that's because he didn't put a semicolon where I would have put a semicolon, or like if it needs to be there, but that's all I found. And I'm like, that's awesome.
Definitely take that. Yeah.
Because it was a whole lot worse when you got it.
That's fair. Yeah. I mean, it wasn't awful, but every writer needs an editor, and I'm not the best editor in the world by any means, but
dude,
I'm happy to help.
You're gonna do everything from now on. I'm sorry, but that's your new gig. Like, I'm not even gonna look around. Like, that's you. If I do another book, you're gonna be the editor. Thank you.
Well, as long as it took me to actually get to it, if you're still willing to work with me on that, then that seems fair.
Well, here's what I'm going to do next time. I'm going to give you, like, plenty of notice.
Uh-huh.
And we're gonna do it in steps.
There you go.
Like, if there's another book, I'm going to write, like, a thing, and then I'm going to send it to you, and then I'm going to write, like, another thing, and then I'll send that to you, and, like, that's how that's going to work.
That's wise.
But yeah. I've decided that if there's going, you're going to get a kick out of this. If there's going to be another book, I have to get a ghostwriter. Like, you know our buddy Mike Wilbon on PTI.
Sure.
Does that for a lot of people. Like, he wrote a book with Shaq. And writing a book with Shaq means that I think Mike probably wrote most of it and Shaq just told stories.
Sure.
That's what I need. Like, I need that. And I think he did the same thing with Charles Barkley as well. I need that because
yeah.
I'm not that good of a writer. You are a better writer than me. I'm not that good. So I need to just sit around and tell stories and have somebody make it into a book.
Yeah, that's fair. That's a good system. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that system. The stories are way more important than the ability to write them. Without the stories, the writing doesn't matter. So yeah, get somebody that can help you convey it well and you're set.
Well, hey, if this first trip to your place works out well, there may be more, and I may co-opt you for that as well.
That's fair. That's
so because I do have a lot more we can talk about,
right?
So I'm excited about that, and everything's going well. But it's a little different. People keep calling me a published author, and I'm like, dude, I didn't even really do anything.
Yeah.
Like, I had a lot of help from a lot of really great people to make that happen. So,
yeah. So it's a cool thing. I'm happy for you. I think it's awesome.
Go buy
his book.
Yes, go buy my book. Tommy, don't go buy my book because I'm
still waiting for a copy of the book.
Yes, I'm gonna bring you a copy when I see you. It's gonna have a nice note in it.
Oh, look at that! That somebody else writes.
Yes. Yes.
Because if you've ever seen Jamie's handwriting,
here's what's going on with the notes, and you're making me laugh, sir. Because here's what's going on with the notes. Jane is writing the notes, and then I am signing at the bottom. because my signature looks like it does, but as long as the note makes sense, I'm all good.
Yep. So, and when you see his signature, you'll understand why Jane's writing the notes.
And my, the funny thing is, nobody will ever, when I die, nobody will ever be able to validate that it's authentic, because it changes every time I put pen to paper.
Yep.
So, that's going to be a lot of fun. Good luck for you guys that have the book when I die, trying to make money off of it, because you'll never be able to validate that I actually wrote it.
Yep.
100%. So, I love that you're getting a kick out of that. I really do love that. You know what I think needs to happen? Here's what I think needs to happen. And I don't know when it'll get done, but I've been thinking a lot about this, trying to get some more speaking gigs and stuff. I have decided that maybe you and I need to write a book. Like, I wrote a book about what it's like to be a handicapped dude. Now you and I need to write a book about what it's like to be a friend of a handicapped dude living with it for 13 years.
Yep, that's fair. That's some interesting possible perspective there, I would say.
Yeah, I would think so, because we've had to have a ramp for every house that you've lived in, including this new house. Holy crap, man. Can you not get one accessible house?
Yep, that's fair.
We should get back to the news, I would think.
We should, yeah. We've got stuff to talk about, which starts with E3 news, which is awesome, because E3 is right around the corner, and we're excited. So we know what Nintendo's approach to E3 is going to be at this point, which looks a whole lot like what their past several E3s have done, and so they are not going to do a press conference, at least at this point, if not announced that they're doing a press conference. They will be doing a Nintendo Live presentation that will happen on the 12th of June at 9 a.m. Pacific time. And then they will also, and this is probably the bigger news, the thing that they are going to be focusing on for E3 is Super Smash Brothers. So new Super Smash Brothers coming to the Switch. That's a big deal. That's what they're dedicating their time to. Which, to be honest, cool, awesome. I'm not just Super Smash Brothers, honestly, I like it. I don't love it. And so for me, a lot of their other titles are much more interesting. But I understand, I get it, that like I'm probably in a minority with that, and that Super Smash Brothers is a massive, massive deal for Nintendo. And so we'll be seeing a lot of that.
If we combine enough PCs to set up one there, I think if that's the case, we'll be playing A Way Out during right. the Nintendo Direct, because I like Super Smash Brothers, but I don't want to see an hour of Super Smash Brothers.
Agreed. I don't either. So now that we know that that's their kind of public thing, they're also having a Splatoon 2 World Championship. So something to look forward to there as well. That being said, now let's dream a little bit about what we would like to see from Nintendo at E3, and I know we're probably in the same place for this, but there's two big things that I hope that they show. One is new Metroid Prime. We got the teaser last year. Like, we need to see video and gameplay this year, and so give us that, please. The second thing I really want to see is more Breath of the Wild content. What's the next DLC that you're doing, with details about that? If you give me those two things, honestly, whatever else you decide to do with the rest of your time at E3, I don't even care about a little bit.
Like, the thing that scares me is if you talk about Breath of the Wild content, we're only going to get like 5 minutes, and that's going to be depressing.
Yes.
Because that I want an hour of.
Yes.
That and Metroid I want an hour of.
Yeah, so my hope is they're doing the Treehouse Live thing again that they've done for the past couple of E3s, which is cool that they do lots of content during those times. And so I'm hoping that during that Treehouse Live time is when we'll get to see kind of more long-term or long-play demos of those things. And the Smash Brothers things can happen, and I'm super happy about that. But goodness, the things I want are Zelda and Metroid, and so I hope that they deliver on that. I'm a little worried that they're not going to have anything new for Metroid this year. I'm worried that we're going to have to wait another year to get that.
You know how much I'm craving Metroid. This is how much I'm craving Metroid. I got excited when I saw a little info about God of War, and one of the reviewers that I was listening to said that God of War had some Metroidvania elements, meaning that you would have to go back to some areas once you got leveled up and were able to get into some new places. I got genuinely excited about that because that's not something that we have seen in a God of War. I want me some Metroid.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree wholeheartedly. That's the next big thing I'm really excited about on the Switch. And so hopefully we see that at E3.
Holy cow. While we're talking about Nintendo, I don't mean
go ahead.
I can't believe I didn't bring this up at the beginning of the show. One cool Nintendo thing that I saw thanks to Twitch is the Twit people got a hold of Nintendo Cardboard.
And you don't even realize this, but that's the next thing. So keep going.
Awesome! Awesome!
You could go look at the show notes and see that that was the next thing in order.
So I didn't look,
I love it.
I didn't look at the show notes. So, like, I apologize. I did not look at the show notes before the show. I didn't know this was about to happen, but they, on the new screensavers this week, they talked about Nintendo Cardboard that just came out, and Leo is not there. Leo is on vacation or something, and so he had a couple of stand-ins, and I have to say, like, I love you guys, Megan Roney. I love you. You're great, but dude, where's Leo? That's all I have to say about that. And I watched it, and they gave it to a couple of kids that are one of the producer's kids. And they're very, very smart kids. And the thing that stood out to me is they built all the stuff that we've already seen. They built the robot backpack, and they built the piano, and they built all of that. And they asked the kid how long that it took. And he looked at the piano and he goes, that took about 3 hours. Okay? So I'm thinking 3 hours of building, that's worth a little bit of money. And there's a ton of cardboard in this package.
Yeah.
Like there's a ton of stuff that you can do. And they're already talking about build your own stuff. I think it's going to be really cool if you have kids. But after this 20-minute demo, I realized something. I have absolutely no interest in Nintendo Cardboard.
Yeah.
Because I'm not a builder. I'm just not. It doesn't matter what environment I'm in, I'm not a builder. Yeah. And I don't want to build this like... You and I might build it and we might play with it, but it's literally something that's going to captivate us for about 20 minutes and then we're going to be on the next thing. Now, you and I with the little girl building this or me with Avery building this, it's a whole other deal.
I think you're absolutely right. So go by the show notes because there's a good video there similarly of just kind of an overview now that it's out. I watched a YouTube video of the Easy Allies team putting the piano together, which I think it tends to be maybe the most complex one. Maybe the robot suit is on that level as well. But they did like a time lapse, and it took them, two adults that were putting it together, like 2 hours to get it all put together and working and everything else. So yeah, it's intensive, and then the payoff is probably not even 2 hours of you know deep entertainment unless it's something that you're really, really interested in. And so like the piano thing is super cool. Like it's way deeper than I thought it was. After watching them put it together and seeing kind of the details, and so it has like you put the piano together and then you put together these little like circle button kind of things that you can interchange. And each one of those has like either different sounds on it, or you can spin them to change the sound in some way, which is cool and interesting. It also has little like perforated cardboard things that you can use as like a step sequencer to make like drum grooves, which I thought was really cool. Like, that's kind of fun and random, which I didn't know it went nearly that deep. Yet, it's still, you know, a couple of hours worth of entertainment for a couple hours worth of work to put it together. And to be fair, the couple of hours of work putting it together is part of the fun. Like, it should be. If you're not interested in building stuff, you know, probably not for you. And personally, like you said, I mean, it's not something I'm terribly interested in on my own. When a little girl gets a little bit older, if this is still a thing, or even if it's not, just something to go back to, it would be something I think would be fun to do with her, you know, over time, because sitting down for 2 hours and putting the thing together for most kids is going to be pretty tough. Maybe scale up, start with some of the simpler things, and then work up to the more complex things. It still feels very novelty-ish, and I think that's probably what most people are experiencing with it. It's very much a novelty, but it's a cool, interesting novelty, and may get you some fun, especially if you have kids. If you don't have kids involved, probably not as much fun.
Well, I laugh because I said to myself, I could totally see somebody like Spider doing this. Like, this would be something that I think Spider would be involved in. After it's built and it's done, he's probably going to go on about his business. But he was somebody that I thought about when watching them build this thing. It's going to vary greatly depending on the type of personality that you are.
Absolutely. I think that's totally fair. I would even say for me, like, watching them put together, is it looks very kind of cathartic, you know? Like, for me, like, even being in my 30s, like, I still like playing with, like, Legos and stuff, because it's kind of, you know, it's just doing stuff with your hands that can be cathartic, can be just a chill thing to do, kind of something to get lost in. I've been, one of the classes I'm teaching this semester is an equipment maintenance and repair class, which has required me to be doing a lot of like soldering projects and that kind of stuff, a lot of little electrical projects. And I've just had a blast with it because it's just, you know, like, it's doing something different. It's not sitting in front of a screen, which most of my life is sitting in front of a screen. And so doing something that's video game related, that's not sitting in front of a screen when you're putting these little cardboard things together, I can see actually being a kind of fun change of pace. And so, yeah. That said, none of the games look like they're deep enough to be cool kind of on their own. The fun part is the little cardboard element of it, of getting to interact with this tactile thing. By the way, Nintendo does offer replacement cardboard sheets for all the little things that can go wrong. And so because it's made of cardboard, it's going to break. And so if you want to replace things after they break, you can go and buy. They're not going to replace them for you for free, but you can go buy new sheets that they have it broken down into, like, each one of the little things. So the piano cardboard pack, if you need to replace any components or replace the whole thing, would cost you $12 for the little cardboard set, which is almost as expensive as anything gets. The only thing that's more expensive is the body for the robot kit, which is $14. Everything else is between $5 and $10, with a few things that are a little bit cheaper. I also learned through this whole thing that the way that this whole thing works, I just hadn't ever looked into it enough. The way that it does, like, all the different variables, like the piano, the way that it actually knows which keys you're pushing and all that, is all based off of infrared. And so it uses the infrared on the controllers and all these little reflector strips to analyze that data. It's essentially just on-off systems that are telling you what key you're pressing or what variable is being changed or whatever inside these little boxes, which is really pretty cool. Like, that's a really innovative way to use the technology that's built in on that controller. I don't know if they had Labo planned before they put the thing out, but it's really well executed. It's a cool idea and seems to work well. That was one of my questions going in. Like, if you put this whole piano together, how much fidelity are you going to have on it? How easy is it going to be for one of those notes to not work? And so far, everything I've seen is people have had really good success with it. And so that's a big positive for this thing. So, yeah, it's it's cool, gimmicky, probably something we're not going to play with much. I think that's fair.
It's depressing, but I think that's kind of the case, yeah.
Yeah, it's cool. And again, if you have kids, I think it's really cool. And so enjoy. When my kid gets older, we'll play around with it maybe then. So, a couple more things on Nintendo. Nintendo's going to kind of dominate the news today, just so you know. This one, a story that they're probably not going to like as much. But the inevitable with the Nintendo Switch has already happened in that it's been hacked, which they all do. They all get hacked at some point. But this one, to me, was especially interesting because the way that they're talking about this hack is that it is unpatchable. In that the hack is a hardware defect, a hardware bug, that the only way that they could fix it is by changing the hardware. And so for units that are already out there, there's no real fix to this. For future units, they'll probably have this fixed. But Nintendo Switches that are already on the market, yeah, you're out of luck. So I want to read you this paragraph just because I have no idea what this hack actually means. Like, I consider myself geeky, but I'm definitely not enough in this world to understand all this. But I just love this this paragraph in that it makes absolutely no sense to me, but I think it's fascinating nonetheless. So this is how the hack is explained. The exploit, as outlined, makes use of a vulnerability inherent in the Tegra's X1's USB recovery mode, circumventing the lockout operations that would usually protect the chip's crucial boot ROM by sending a bad length argument to an improperly coded USB control procedure at the right point. The user can force the system to, quote, request up to 65,535 bytes per control request, end quote. That data easily overflows a crucial direct memory access, DMA buffer, in the boot ROM, in turn allowing data to be copied into the protected application stack and giving the attacker the ability to run arbitrary code. So that's what they did, which is phenomenal. It's a hardware exploit, and I understand that much of it, at least. So the end result right now is that there's not really anything that this hack is released and doing, but there's a good chance that this hack is going to be released and giving Nintendo headaches within the next several months.
Yeah, that's not good.
It seems like the most likely thing that they can do as a kind of punitive measure, if you choose to employ this hack, is they can lock you out from network stuff. That they can tell if you have a hacked hacked hardware, and thus can lock you out from any kind of online stuff. But they can't send out a mandatory patch that's going to fix this exploit. And so if you have a current Switch, once this hack gets out, there's a good chance. And it does require, like, you have to jump. There's a few, you have to actually do a mechanical short of a jumper in it. And so it's not just code. You actually have to do something mechanical. But there is a little, like, accessory that this group has already built to let you do that. It utilizes one of the Joy-Con inputs where it slides into the actual Switch console to short out these jumpers to enable this hardware vulnerability. And so if you go buy this little thing, if you already have a Switch that's going to be susceptible to this, you may never be able to put it online, but you may have a hack Switch that you can play free games on. I mean, that's ultimately what they're worried about happening. And so there's a good chance that vulnerability will be a real thing within the not so distant future.
You know, it's going to be a real thing in about 10 minutes.
Right. Yeah. It's already a real thing for some people. It's just whenever it's made a lot more public. Somebody apparently has already gotten the Dolphin emulator and is running Wind Waker on a Switch. And so, yeah, good times. And by the way, like, legalities aside, and let me emphasize, like, you shouldn't pirate games. Like, once upon a time, we pirated a bunch of games. I have broken that habit, and I'm so happy I've broken that habit as somebody who works in a creative industry and wants people to buy stuff that I work on so that I get paid. I want to buy stuff that other people work on and get paid. So I'm going to preface all this by saying, go buy games. You pay money for them. They have value. Go buy games. That being said, the idea of having an emulator running on a Switch that I could play like SNES games on the Switch on the go is incredibly appealing. Like, that just sounds like the best thing.
I love that you gave that disclaimer before we started, but you and I both want this. Sorry, yeah. We both want this.
Yeah, it's going to be up to my better angels at this point to resist, and I think I will. I don't think I'll go down this route. At a younger age, I definitely would have. I wouldn't even thought twice about it. But at this point in my life, I don't think I would. But I'm super interested in the idea. I'm not going to lie. I'm fascinated by it.
Like, seriously. You're right. You shouldn't steal stuff, but holy cow. That's a really powerful machine that I would be... That would be way cool.
It would be. So it is appealing in that way. And so maybe one thing we'll get out of this is if my kind of theory is something that appeals to a lot of people, which I don't know that it will. But if it does, maybe Nintendo will just... kind of proactively put out a whole bunch of games on the Switch, old SNES games and that kind of stuff that I could pay money for and play right on my Switch. Having Super Mario World or Super Metroid on the Switch would be a blast. I would do that in a heartbeat. And so, yeah, Nintendo, if you're listening, take away my temptation to go hack your console by just giving me some good old classic games on your console.
Yeah, I don't know if that's going to happen, but nice thought.
I'm trying. We'll see what happens. Speaking of good old classic games and things that are legally murky, somebody put together, this is brilliant, somebody put together a mashup video game of Super Mario 64 and Ocarina of Time. This dude spent 5 years working on this game that is... The world of Hyrule from Ocarina of Time, except you traverse it and the storyline is built off of Super Mario characters.
Well, that's it. I gotta play that.
Right?
I gotta play that.
It looks so amazing. Like, Super Mario 64 and Ocarina of Time are two amazingly fun games, and so the idea of putting them together is just fascinating. So go by the show notes because you can see a video of it. It looks really, really weird. I don't know if it's any fun at all to play, but it looks really, really interesting, and I would like to at least play around with it because of that. And so, again, legalities aside, it looks fascinating.
I don't even know what to say other than where can we get it?
That's a good question. It's called, the name of it is Super Mario 64 : Ocarina of Time, which is brilliant. So Google that and see if you can find it. I don't even know what, like, you need an N64 emulator and the ROM for it or whatever. But yeah, I don't think I've ever downloaded an N64 emulator. I know they exist, but I've never used one before, so I'm kind of interested in that.
You're fixing to go use one.
I know, right? Yeah, it's likely going to happen because I definitely want to see this. By the way, it is also a reminder of how hideous graphics were on the N64. Like the world of 3D that the N64 and then the PlayStation brought us was amazing, and at the time it blew my mind. But good gracious, is it hideous in retrospect. Like, when we played God of War and Detroit today, and then you look at something like this. Sprite-based games like NES, SNES, Genesis games, to me, still hold up pretty well. The N64, early PlayStation stuff, to me, just looks bad.
Yeah, it's not good. It's and all I can say is that we didn't know any better back in the day. So.
Yeah. Very true. We thought it was cool. So a couple more things on Nintendo One in this kind of vein. Something that hopefully will look pretty good on the Switch is Wolfenstein 2 Shadow of the Colossus, or the new Colossus Shadow of the Colossus. The new Colossus is coming to the Switch on June 29th.
Right.
So in just a couple of months from now. By the way, I played a demo of it. They had like a maybe still have a demo of it or had a free weekend of it or something on Steam. I don't remember what it was. But I got just a taste of it, and I really want to play this game. It's really pretty. The first or whatever I played, if it's the beginning of the game or whatever, I don't know the context of it at all. But you play the whole thing in a wheelchair. like after the what happens in the game before this, Wolfenstein, but you know, whatever. You're apparently very injured at the end of, or somewhere in this game again. I don't know the context of it. So you're rolling around in a wheelchair, trying to get off this ship and like shooting Nazis, which is incredibly entertaining. So yeah, that's a good time.
Yeah. I don't know if I should be offended or what. How does that even work?
Yeah, it's awesome. I think you'd enjoy it. Give you some inspiration for crazy, ridiculous things you could do.
Yeah, new book right there.
Right.
Jamie Jordan goes fantasy. Thank you very much.
Yes, which would be fantastic. And one more Nintendo thing. Speaking of classic games, there's a lot of classic games that are planning to come to the Switch, but they're not Nintendo. They're Sega games. Sega is bringing like Sonic the Hedgehog and Phantasy Star to the Switch, which is really cool and really messing with my 12-year-old self's head. Like, just can't wrap my head around the fact that Sonic the Hedgehog will be on the Nintendo Switch. But that's the world we live in now.
Yeah, I shouldn't be able to play Toad Jam and Earl on the Switch.
Right. Like,
that's just weird.
By the way, I still get, you know, the Kickstarter thing for the Toe Jam and Earl remake. I'm still getting a little updates about that every once in a while. But
yes,
my goodness, that
too.
Thing's taken forever.
Like, what was that, 4 years ago?
It's been a long time.
Long time.
Yeah, so I'm excited. It's not something that like I need right now that I'm like waiting on pins and needles for. But every time they send me like an update, I'm like, oh, is the game finally here? And it's like, we added a new song, and I'm like, cool, I don't care. You're like, give me the game, you know, or don't bother me. Like, you just keep getting my hopes up, and then it's not here. So, yeah, I'm excited about when Toe Jam and Earl gets here. Until then, I just that's another one that I'm sure will have online co-op to it, and that's another one we're gonna have to play together when it comes out, because Toe Jam and Earl was fantastic back in the day.
Yeah, and that's one of those that when it happens, it will own us for as long as it takes.
Yes, I really hope they execute that thing well. And I know every time we talk about Toe Jam and Earl, there's people that are like, I've never heard of that game before. Go find Toe Jam and Earl on an emulator and a ROM or whatever you have to do to find a game. It was on the Nintendo eStore because I played it. It's been 10 years ago now, probably. But I played it on the Wii because they released it on the Wii. And that was a weird thing of playing Toe Jam and Earl on the Wii. But we talked about it at the time. It's the first time I've ever actually beaten Toe Jam and Earl. Me and a buddy played through it on the Wii like one afternoon and beat the game. And I never beat it on the Sega Genesis back in the day when I was young. And so it's stupid. It's ridiculous. It's over the top. It's aliens. And it's amazingly fun and awesome. So play Toe Jam and Earl.
Absolutely.
And as much as I mock... Yeah, as much as I mocked the song, one of the best things about Toe Jam and Earl was the music. This crazy, cool, funk music on the Sega Genesis, and so hopefully the music for this this remake is pretty good as well.
I hope the music is good that you can actually bump on some good speakers.
Yes,
because I want to get some good monitors and play some of that stuff.
Yes, yeah. A couple more things for you in the news, and we'll wrap up here shortly. But still a handful of other things to hit on. First of all, Campo Santo, the studio behind the oh my goodness, what's the game called in Firewatch. I wanted to call it Overwatch. You know, just screwing up names all over the place. Not Overwatch for sure. Firewatch, which was this fantastic title of a quote unquote walking simulator, but a really really good one that was really fun of you working at a observation tower out in the forest looking for fires and this crazy stuff that happens around it. They have been acquired by Valve. And so Campo Santo is now making games for Valve, which is awesome. So In the Valley of the Gods, which is their next game they're working on that we've seen a little bit of that deals with pyramids and stuff that looks a lot like Firewatch, will officially be put out under Valve, which is super cool. It's a studio I really like, teaming with a publisher I really like. And so I'm really excited for what happens going into the future.
Love me some Valve. Love me some Valve.
So on the perennial E3 question with Valve, do we see anything from Valve at E3? They don't really show up to E3 at this point. And when are we ever going to see Half-Life 3?
But about the time we turn 65, we will see Half-Life 3. I'm at this point with Half-Life 3, I'm not even expecting anything, and that's why it's going to be so awesome when it does hit, because
yeah.
When it happens and you hear the music and you see the logo, it's going to be like, because, like, I'm not expecting it.
Yeah, the thing that would break E3 is, so the past several years at E3, they've done the PC show, which is cool. You and I enjoy the PC show. It's always a little goofy. It's not as well polished as the big press conferences because it's not put on by one of the companies, whatever. But it is something that we've enjoyed from the past few E3s, both liking PC games. So if Valve wanted to just destroy E3, they show off just the logo and the music, bong, you know, like the Valve thing happen, and then the Half-Life logo pop up, and then that's it during that PC gaming show, and E3 is forever changed. It will never, ever, ever be the same after.
Like
E3, that would be phenomenal.
E3, if that happens, E3 will just stop.
Yes.
Like, if you see the Half-Life logo in Gordon's face, like, E3 will literally just stop. It won't matter what else anybody shows for the rest of the show. It will be about Half-Life 3. And I gotta think that Gabe and Doug and the rest of the guys over there have got to know that. And they've got to know what people want. But have you ever considered the idea that things have gone so well for them that they're like, yeah, we're kind of past doing Half-Life?
Definitely. Yeah.
You know?
I think that's perfectly fair. Like, I think there's a really good chance that I'm like, we don't need that, you know? Like, especially at this point, like, the reality is, unless they just execute flawlessly, if it's not a perfect game, it's a disappointment, right? Like, because the franchise with the first two games is so beloved and really well executed. First two games are fantastic. And because there's been this anticipation of it for a decade plus now, you know, unless you have like one of the best games ever made, it only probably looks bad to release it, which is unfair. It sucks that that's kind of what it would be. But I think that's what it would be, right? Do you agree?
Yeah. And I don't even think they're worried about that. I just wonder if, because when the original Half-Life came out, that was what Valve had. There
yeah.
was no Steam. There was like, all they had was this one franchise that was huge, right? And then everything else happened from that.
Yep.
Now they have all this other stuff. And they're looking at Half-Life 3 going, yeah, we could do that, but we really don't have time. All of that being said, I remember what they did with Portal 2, okay? Portal 2 is arguably, I mean, depending on what perspective that you take about Portal, Portal 2 is arguably better than the original.
Yeah.
And so
I would agree with that.
So I think they have, I think they have the ability to do it. I just wonder if at this point, if they really think it's worth it to try.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I don't know that they will. And honestly, like, to be fair, of the two of us on this show, you are the much bigger Half-Life person. I played the games and I liked them, but I wasn't nearly as big on them as you were, as a couple of my other friends were at the time when they were a big deal. And so I say this a little bit from that perspective, that they're not my favorite games of all time or very high on my list necessarily.
Well, the reason why... For me, the reason why Half-Life was what it was everybody played Wolfenstein, everybody played Duke Nukem,
yep.
Everybody played those, but Half-Life was that times a zillion.
Yes.
Like, and that was, I remember booting it up and just having my mind blown.
And they were big PC titles at a time when I wasn't a big PC gamer. I was very much a console gamer at the time. And so when Half-Life was a big deal, I wasn't as much into the PC world. And so I missed that hype a little bit. But I totally get it. Like, I'm saying that to say my perspective is different because my world was different. But I get why people love the franchise and are massively, pumped about the fact that Half-Life 3 may... some point exists. I'm excited about that too, but I could live without it, whereas some people are going to go to their grave wanting that game, you know, like some people are going to be disappointed. Exactly. And I get that, and I hope for your sake and for other people who are in that boat that it does happen. I want it to be fan-freaking-tastic when it does happen.
Well, and the thing is that now that I built the computer that I built, I know that whenever Half-Life 3 comes out, I'm going to have to upgrade again.
Yeah.
Like, I have a 1080, and it's not going to be enough. I'm going to have to upgrade again.
Yeah.
Because that's how big Half-Life 3 is.
Yep. And it'll be completely and totally worth it.
Yeah. I mean, I can't believe I'm going to admit the fact that I'd be willing to spend $2,000 to play one game, but yeah, I'd do that.
Yeah.
Like,
fair
like,
enough.
I don't, given your different perspective, I don't know if you feel the same way, but if Half-Life 3 comes out, that's an immediate upgrade. I don't care whatever I have to play it at the best possible. Like, that would make me buy a 4K monitor.
Yeah. I'm definitely not in that boat, but I am with you in it. Like, I understand where you're coming from on it. I totally get that. I would not fault you even a little bit.
And the thing is I can't tell you why.
Right.
Yeah. The only thing that I can say to you that makes sense is it's Half-Life.
Yeah.
And there's not another world like it. Like, it just, it doesn't, I know it's mental. I understand that. We've got eight zillion other great games. But if Half-Life 3 comes out, like, I'm building another computer. That's it. I'm building another computer because and I didn't feel that way about the first game. Like, I played the first game and I went, this is awesome! and then like Half-Life 2 came out and I'm like, this is cool! I need a better machine to play it on. And now it's like, I have to start with the good machine. You know?
Yep.
I can't explain why. It just is what it is.
Yep. Perfectly fair. A couple of quick things before we wrap up here. PUBG is going to have its first official big tournament this summer with a $2 million prize pool. It's going to happen in Berlin. They're inviting 20 pro teams to come do it. Again, the esports thing up until this point and still probably going forward, I don't really get. Interested enough in this to take a look. I might try to watch some of this. PUBG is fairly fun to watch. I've watched a little bit streaming on Twitch, and like, it's fairly captivating. And to me, it feels a little weird watching strangers play video games. Like, I get a little bit more if I'm like watching each other play video games. You and I grew up doing that, of playing video games with our buddies where we'd switch off the controller. So I get like, when it's your buddy playing a game, you watch it and it's cool. Strangers is a little weird, but like, it's kind of fun. Like, it's so kind of tactical, and like, the sound is so important of hearing where things are coming from in the world, that I might watch a little bit of this. And just fascinated again that there's a world in which there's a $2 million prize pool for a video game.
Well, and the thing is that PUBG is different to me than anything else, and that's why I think it's such a big deal, because it's so different. Environment-wise, it's the only game that I've seen in a long time that you can play for 20 minutes with friends, and you can build yourself up, and you can get armor, and you can get a car, and you can get all that, and you can die in 45 seconds. Yeah. Like, you can play for 20 minutes getting ready, and it takes one headshot, and you're done.
Yeah.
And for me, the suspense of that is what makes it watchable.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with that. There definitely is that kind of anticipation and drama that goes into it. By the way, now that the Battle Royale game thing is becoming a big deal, which we will probably talk about more in the future about that trend, but Fortnite obviously is also a massive deal now. Believe it or not, there's also a Kickstarter for a Battle Royale tabletop game. So it's called Last One Standing, and it's supposed to try to give you the kind of same vibe, feel, resource gathering, going and finding weapons and armors and that kind of stuff that you have to do in PUBG or Fortnite or something like that, but in a tabletop game configuration. And for the life of me, I want to think it's the stupidest idea ever, but I kind of want to play it.
I first of all, when you say tabletop game, you've immediately got us
right,
and then you throw that in, and it's like, well, okay, if you're gonna do that, I have to play it just to see how it works. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yep.
Like, it may suck, but I have to see that.
100%. One more thing I'll throw in here, and then go by the show notes, gamingcensored.com, to see the stuff we didn't get to, which includes a new Doom movie in the works, if the Doom movie we already had wasn't enough. There's another one coming, and it probably won't be coming to theaters, but will probably be landing on Netflix or Amazon or something like that, which is probably really smart. And the idea of ray tracing, which I don't know much about, but is probably what graphics are going to be based off in the world, and it's actually really cool technology that, like the paragraph I read from the hacking thing, I don't remotely understand, but seems really cool. There's a whole story about that on the show notes, so if you're interested in that kind of techie stuff. But I did want to get this one in here because I think it's just fantastic. The game Warcraft 3. Warcraft 3, which came out in, I believe, 2002, just got a patch. It's still being updated. It's been patched to be widescreen compatible because people are still playing this game. Makes it widescreen, has done some other upgrades and that kind of stuff for people who are still playing Warcraft 3, which I remember because I loved Warcraft as when I was young. I remember going and picking up Warcraft 3 pretty quickly after it came out, and it had like this cool story mode to it, whereas the first two Warcraft games were just more the real-time strategy element, at least the way I remember it, without this kind of story side of it. Warcraft 3 introduced the more story side that like StarCraft 2 also did a lot of. But that was when I was a freshman in college. That's a game that they're still patching, which just blew my mind to see. It also apparently is going to be the last patch that's compatible with Windows XP.
Wow.
Which just cracks me up.
Which, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, if you're still using Windows XP, you need to consider buying a new computer.
Yes.
I'm just saying, you need to consider buying a new computer.
I just love in my head picturing the dude that still has his XP rig with like his like 2 gigabyte hard drive that is geeked out that Warcraft 3 had just got patched, you know, like that's so pumped for this patch of a 16-year-old game or whatever it is. By the way, it's a phenomenal game. I love Warcraft 3. It's a really, really fun game. So good for them for still patching it, which is just brilliant. So,
yep.
So there you go. Go by GamingGunSister.com to see the things we missed right there on the show notes for you.
Yeah, and I'm sure there's some cool stuff that we missed. I'm still trying to get over the fact that there's a dude out there with an XP machine.
You're right.
Like, seriously, folks, if that's what you're doing, you need to do something else. But all of that being said, we are wrapped up for now. But before we get out of here, I got to tell you that you can get in touch with us just like Brigham did. You can email us, gaminguncensored@gmail.com, or you can call the voicemail line at
509-GAME-210.
509-GAME-210. And, of course, it'll cut you off after 3 minutes. But call us back, and we will splice it together because we're that good.
Yeah, we are.
Also, we have to mention thanks to the Patreon people. Lots of good people over there. Lots of stuff going on.
Yes, I'm glad you mentioned that because I've forgot to mention the people. I usually do that after the segment, and it just skipped my mind. So, big thanks to Cabbage, Jose, Narc, Duff, Josh, Hector, Spider, Spencer, Kavash, and, of course, our boy Chad. Thank you all for your support. Thank you for buying us games that we can play and be super pumped about. By the way, just pulling up the website, we still have the poll up for the most anticipated game of 2018, and God of War is on there and received a grand total of one vote. We still potentially have Red Dead Redemption this year, which could definitely supersede God of War as game of the year. And so that's a big one. We also have The Last of Us Part 2 on that poll, which I don't think we're going to see this year, honestly. That's the one that's winning, and understandably so. But God of War at this point is the best of what's been released so far.
It is really good, folks. If you haven't played it, please go play it because it is really good.
Yes.
I have to say thanks to the Patreon guys because we are now getting games faster and earlier than we ever have.
Yes.
Because of Patreon people. I met somebody who was talking about God of War at work on Tuesday, and I made a comment and said, it's really good. And they said, have you played it? And I said, yeah, it's really good.
Yeah.
I'm amazed at the stuff that we've gotten that nobody else has, that I never would have thought was possible, even 10 years ago. I've been told by Duff that we have a care package coming, which scares the crap out of me.
Nice.
But there is a care package coming.
Fantastic.
So that should be very, very, very interesting. I'm very glad to be where we are. I'm very glad to be doing this, and I'm very much looking forward to E3.
Agreed. It's going to be awesome.
It's going to be a lot of fun, and we're going to get to do it around a little kid.
Yes, which will be fantastic.
Can she eat ice cream yet? That's probably not a thing.
No, that is not a thing yet. It's a bummer.
Well, like, I just got to figure out what I'm going to feed her. Because I have to do something to spoil her.
Yep, that's fair.
Graham crackers, probably. That's probably a thing.
That's as close as we're going to get, probably.
I can't believe I'm thinking like this, but I am. I'm so looking forward to seeing her.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. As well you should be, because she's fantastic.
For right now, though, I think that's about it. Is there anything else, sir?
I think we're good.
All right, then. I'm Jamie. That's Tommy. We are Gaming Uncensored, and we are out.
Would you like to submit a segment for the show? Send it to gaminguncensored@gmail.com. And don't worry, we'll play just about anything. Gaming Uncensored.